This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
So the other thing we didn't mention with the Texans, the trade rumors, Seth, the big one, the one that I think feels like it's based in actual reporting as opposed to just random conjecture. Fuller, Aaron Reese reporting yesterday that the Packers have called the Texans about Will Fuller. I think Fuller and Watt are the two that are at the top of the list. If you're a Texan fan looking to recoup draft equity, it's Fuller and it's Watt that would probably be at the top of that list, I would think.
That's what I think that, and this wasn't a surprise because Matt LaFleur kind of gushed about Will Fuller on the, you know, he gushed openly about Will Fuller beforehand, you know, like brought it right up to the, he brought it right up to the level of tampering, I suppose.
Yes.
Before he went, I feel like in the NBA they would have gotten him for tampering. If it was Daryl Morey, they would have fined him for tampering, but he talked about how he can be a number one. Now, boy, the Green Bay Packers famously have not spent a first-round pick on a non-quarterback skill position since they drafted Aaron Rodgers.
It's incredible.
In the first round. It's an incredible statistic when you think about how long Aaron Rodgers has been in the league, and they haven't really gone out of their way to add any top-end talent. And they've turned a lot of guys into top-end talent, like Davante Adams, and, you know, and credit to Davante Adams, obviously. But the thought of having both Will Fuller and Davante Adams, This is where the Texans might get a deal that blows them out of the water and maybe is way more than people think Will Fuller is worth because the Packers are so close. The Packers, like, it looks like, hey, man, their defense might actually be turning the corner a little bit. The offense is doing all of this with only Davante Adams as a real receiving threat. Everybody else is just an Aaron Rodgers creation. That if you put Will Fuller out there, I don't know how anybody's going to stop the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers short of injuries, which is kind of a concern. Now, Davante Adams has been banged up a couple times.
Yes.
And Will Fuller's been banged up in his career, obviously. So I think that it'd be ironic that they'd be bringing Will Fuller in just in case Davante Adams got injured. But there you have it.
The best teams in the NFC right now are Seattle. I'm spitballing. I'm not listing them in any sort of order. Seattle, Tampa Bay, obviously. Green Bay, everybody in the NFC East stinks. I think New Orleans is still a team that's really dangerous. The Rams, the Cardinals are a bit of a wild card right now. And then I think the Bears are a fugazi 5-2. So I think I'm looking at, okay, who are the six best teams in the NFC in no particular order? It's Green Bay, it's Seattle, it's LA, it's Arizona, it's Tampa Bay, and it's New Orleans. Like, those are the six where I go. And even Arizona feels like a bit of a reach right now just because they're so nouveau riche. The other five, I feel, are teams that you feel like, okay, they've either had success recently at a near Super Bowl level or to a Super Bowl level. San Francisco, maybe a little bit as well, but they're banged up. Or they've got the head coach and the quarterback that you feel really good about. Boy, if Green Bay went to – if Will Fuller went to Green Bay – is that enough for you if you're Seattle or you're Tampa Bay or New Orleans to go, oh, crap. You know, like, is that a scary – or are we just – do we think too much of Will Fuller because we watch him from day to day?
No, because I think we know what Will Fuller is capable of playing alongside Deshaun Watson if he's healthy, right? Alongside DeAndre Hopkins if he's healthy. So I don't think it doesn't even become a matter of is he a number one wide receiver. It's okay, what can we do with these two guys, Davante Adams and Will Fuller, working next to each other this year? The one thing that I think might hurt how much Green Bay is willing to offer is that they're not in tremendous cap shape for next year. I think right now they've only got about $3 million of cap space in 2021. So it wouldn't be super easy for them to just franchise tag Will Fuller or give him a nice big deal. I don't know if they care about that right this moment, though. I think they figure, well, we'll figure out a way to get it done if we have to and see where we go from there.
Here's how savvy teams might look at it, Seth, is that if you trade for Will Fuller, you're trading for him in a contract year. If you don't have any designs on keeping Will Fuller, let's say you trade a third-round pick for Will Fuller. And I think if the Texans could get a third-round pick for Will Fuller, they've got to think long and hard about that. But the Texans may be able to get this same exact benefit. If you're a team that's not going to be super active in free agency the next couple of years because you're up against the cap, if you trade for Will Fuller, you rent him for these next 9 weeks in the playoffs, and then you let him walk in free agency, chances are you're going to get a pretty decent compensatory pick for him a year later. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah,
you know, if he walks and he leaves and he gets a big deal from somewhere else, then really all you're doing is giving up the time value of having a third-round pick this year versus having it in a year from now.
And you know, the danger in that thinking, Sean, is that, yes, good organizations recognize that. But when Brian Gaines stockpiled picks by getting a bunch of compensatory picks, it went and got his ass fired by Bill O'Brien.
Bill O'Brien doesn't have influence on any of these teams they're talking to.
I know. It goes to show you the kind of taking the long-term approach versus taking the "I gots to have it now." Right. Bill O'Brien was walking around like on a sugar high, like you've said before, but like, "I gotta have it. Give me some Kool-Aid. I need all of it right now." Yeah. There was no long-term approach. Yeah, if you start. And that's where I think if you're courting a new GM too, maybe that's one thing that you kind of have in your presentation package is, look, we got some good offers for Will Fuller, but frankly, we wanted to hire a guy like you to figure out what do you want to do with Will Fuller. Do you want to keep Will Fuller? Do you want to let him go and get a compensatory pick down the road? Because we're going to give you a 6-year deal, man. So go ahead and take the long-term approach. We're all cool.
You know who I want to hire, Seth, a general manager, is the guy who walks in and the very first thing that he says to the question, okay, so what would you do as general manager of our football team? He sits down and he just, with total snark on his face, says, "I'd do everything that Bill O'Brien didn't do." That's exactly what I would do. I'd hire that guy because he has a good sense of humor. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. What's so funny?
Saying he has a good sense of humor because he told the joke that you would have
told. I thought the same thing.
That's a nice little...
There's people in the car right now going, "Sean, it wasn't that funny." I don't know what you think. I thought the same thing. Do you buy for 1 second that Trevor Lawrence is going to go back to Clemson for another year?
I don't know.
Or is this just a thing to scare the Jets off?
No. Well, this is what Trevor Lawrence has to ask himself.
Yeah.
Am I ready to be a jerk? Like, am I ready to pull a John Elway or a Eli Manning or what have you? Am I ready to say no, under no circumstances do I want to be a New York Jet? If that's what he has in him or if that's the way he feels, that's tough, right? I mean, it's tough to be the jerk and have an entire fan base hate you. But look, it happened with Peyton Manning, supposedly. A lot of people thought that Peyton Manning, who knows? This was one of the theories, was that Archie Manning thought that there's no way I want my son going to play for the Jets, so why don't you stick around for another year? I think that Peyton Manning genuinely wanted to win a national championship, so it's probably maybe a little bit of both, or at least a factor in him going back. The problem with Trevor Lawrence staying in, if it was just to avoid the Jets, is that there's zero guarantee that you're going to be happier with whoever's in the number one spot next season.
Right.
It's just you're... And I don't think that's you don't play that game. If you don't want to play for the Jets, then you just flat out figure a way out of it. That's where I think Joe Douglas, the general manager, is going to have to do a really good job once Trevor Lawrence declares himself eligible for the draft of being sure that Trevor Lawrence feels comfortable with the future and whichever coach they hire.
I think we should point out Trevor Lawrence has already said that I'm not going back to school. Like before this truncated season started that they're doing, he announced back in August, September that this is going to be his last year. But he was asked about it again at a press conference this week, and that's when he said, like, "Oh, you never know, you never know." which I immediately read to him looking at the standings and going, oh, crap, the Jets might go 0-16 this year. What a horrible franchise.
Since we're talking about it, I'm looking at the current draft order right now. Just I like to make people cry before breakfast sometimes or on their way to work or if you're just starting work.
Go ahead.
The Texans, if they had not traded away this draft pick, would currently be holding the fifth overall selection in the draft, which I know, look, yes, you're happy you had Laremy Tunsil here, but just for whatever it's worth, if Laremy Tunsil wasn't here, they'd probably be even higher than that, and they might be, you know, first through fourth or so.
I think it was Larry and Stafford who brought this up on our show yesterday, Seth, and I thought it was a really good point. If you're looking for reasons for to root for the Texans to win, and there's no draft reason to root against them winning, there's no longer a reason to root against them winning to get rid of the head coach. He's gone now. Larry brought it up. I thought he put it real well, which is I need to see them win games so I don't have to look at them. So I don't have to watch the Dolphins pick fourth in the draft. I need to see them win some games so the Dolphins are picking 17th in the draft.
Dang it, Sean. I'm in such denial over so much of this stuff. The Dolphins, who have turned themselves into a credible NFL franchise now.
They're in the playoff hunt.
They're in the playoff hunt. Not only that, Sean, they actually, if you look at points for and against, they've got one of the healthiest margins in the league. They've scored 160 points. They've allowed 113.
Yeah.
Like, that's better than the Seahawks. That's better than the Bills in front of them in the division. Like, they're like a bona fide team. Plus, they're going to pick fifth overall in the draft or somewhere thereabouts.
Yeah.
Maybe, Sean, they might pick number one or whatever the Texans end up being. Okay, you're right. I'm glad Larry and Stafford brought that up. I need to just root for the Texans if only to see that draft pick drop.
Yes.
Like, please don't let the Dolphins be a good team and pick number one overall in the draft.
100%.
Doing it without Laremy Tunsil on their roster. How'd you get so good without Laremy Tunsil on your roster?
I thought he was a foundational player. Speaking of the Texans head coaching search, two words that you're going to hear a lot during this quest to find a new head coach for the Texans: search firm. In fact, they used a search firm to find Bill O'Brien. They used this search firm to find Bill O'Brien. And according to John McClain, they're using the same search firm again. Some of the names that the search firm the Texans are going to be using have placed with other teams have me very nervous for this upcoming search. We will take a look at it next. All right, so Seth, tell me if I'm being crazy here. Tell me if I'm reading too much into this. So
Yes, you are.
Okay.
I have no idea what you're about to say.
All right, coming up next. I mentioned the two words that we're going to hear a lot during this head coaching search firm. Two more words: Corn Ferry. If you've heard Corn Ferry, and by the way, one of the underrated things about this coaching search is when people do voice to text and ask us about Corn Ferry. Yeah. And it looks like there's an actual ferry out there that delivers corn to little kids. It's like C-O-R-N-F-A-I-R-Y.
The corn ferry is like this overweight Iowa farmer wearing a flannel shirt and like his Carhartt jeans and just floating around with tiny little fairy wings.
Or
dishing out ears of corn to people.
Sneaking into houses and slipping ears of corn under kids' pillows at night. Hey, what the hell are you doing in here? Sorry about that. Just delivering some ears of corn to your kid for the teeth.
Like your
I'm the corn fairy.
Your Midwest farmer accent is a good one.
Howdy, fellas. I'm the corn fairy. All right, so K-O-R-N. F-E-R-R-Y.
Yeah, no, it's much edgier. It's spelled like corn, like the band, Corn Ferry.
Yeah, it's really what it is. It wouldn't be a person floating around delivering ears of corn. It would be the band Corn playing on a boat in the middle of a harbor somewhere. The Corn Ferry is what that would be. So anyways, that's the search firm. The guy's name is Jed Hughes, who, as I learned yesterday, is a former coach. He coached many different places and has turned his coaching career into a nice little cottage industry where Korn Ferry is a consulting firm, but they've got this arm of it that helps place coaches, GMs, conference commissioners in college across a bunch of different sports. And I found this article from back in December of 2017, Seth, because you and I were talking off the air yesterday. I said, I want to go find out who else that this firm has placed. Like, how much value should we be placing on the opinion of this firm or the legwork that they're doing? Are they really just some grease in the machine, or does their opinion matter in all this? And I don't know the answer to that because what I wanted to find out is who they placed to see if I need to be concerned about their opinion mattering. How successful have some of the folks they've placed been? And here's what I learned. the very first person, the first example of someone they placed, they worked with Jerry Jones right out of the chute in 1998, and they placed Chan Gailey with the Dallas
Chan
Cowboys.
Gailey. Yeah, I remember going up against Chan Gailey when he was so confident that he was going to beat the Texans in the inaugural season. Yeah.
Yeah, so Chan Gailey.
He wouldn't stop gushing about how awesome their offense was in a scrimmage, versus the Texans.
In the late 90s, he hired Chan Gailey. Okay, so Chan Gailey, who Seth Payne has an axe to grind against, apparently. Here was the – so, again, the article's in late 2017. So here's a sentence from the article. At the time of the article, six NFL head coaches had been placed by Jed Hughes of Corn Ferry. And let's see. Now we've got a body of work on these.
Damn it. By the way, I was talking about Dave Campo, of course.
I thought you were, too, but I didn't want to correct you. Yeah.
No, I wish you would have. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for letting me sound like a moron for longer than I had to.
I wasn't totally sure.
Nope. That was Dave Campo. Yeah.
Dave Campo. All right. By the way, Chan Gailey lasted two seasons with the Cowboys, just to be clear.
Yeah.
There were, in 2017, there were six NFL head coaches that were placed by Hughes. Seth, I'm going to go through these and you tell me, okay, should we feel good about these coaches being placed by the search firm that the Texans could be using here in this search? Dan Quinn, Atlanta.
Got
to a Super Bowl.
Ultimately, the biggest problem Dan Quinn had initially was that he hired Richard Smith to be his defensive coordinator.
Right.
He took his play calling away from him and then they went to a Super Bowl. Yeah.
Pete Carroll, Seattle.
That's a good move.
It's a good one, yeah.
And one that wasn't popular at the time. A lot of people thought that the Seahawks were kind of just, like, not just using a retread, but using a retread who was thought of as a guy that can't coach in the NFL.
Right.
Like, he's more suited for college. He's not good for NFL guys.
Okay, the third coach back in 2017 that they had placed, Andy Reid, Kansas City.
That's
a good one, yeah.
And honestly, I was kind of skeptical of that hire, just given the circumstances that Andy Reid left Philadelphia, he had a personal tragedy. It felt like he was rushing into something, and that obviously has worked out.
Right, so far so good. All right, here we go. Hugh Jackson, Cleveland. Went 1-31 in 2 years.
They went a 2-year stretch where they only won one football game.
Yeah.
That's not what you want at all.
No.
Okay.
Now,
at the time, let's see, Hugh Jackson had already been a coach in Oakland, right?
He had been
a head coach in Oakland.
He had.
But he had very innovative offenses, like really cool stuff that they would do.
You watched Hard Knocks just like I did. Hugh Jackson, clown show behind the scenes.
Okay, you know what I'd say, though, is that you got to remember that it's the owners making the final decisions in all these. And if there's one thing we've learned about Jimmy Haslam up there, is that Jimmy Haslam doesn't always listen to the people he hires to advise them. So I don't know how much Jimmy Haslam actually listened to Corn Ferry.
Okay, Doug Marone, Jacksonville. Apparently, Jed Hughes was critical to the process of getting the interim tag off of Doug Marone in Jacksonville.
You know what I would say is, again, okay, he introduced them, but like, why has Doug Marone stuck around as long as he has? And what I mean, how long has Marone been there now? Is this the fourth year?
Well, he's been the full time head coach since 2017.
Yeah.
Okay. And the funny thing about this article, it's December of 2017, so that was when the Jacksonville Jaguars were getting ready to go to the playoffs for the first time in forever. So there's this article is damn near a victory lap for Corn Ferry and Jed Hughes, because they're talking about the role that they played also in Tom Coughlin becoming the president of the organization.
So we'll take these. So as of late, now, are you doing these chronologically?
I'm just doing when this article was written, these are the six head coaches held place.
Yeah, okay, but you're listing these chronologically is what I'm saying.
I'm reading them off the order they're listed in the article that I'm looking at on my computer right now.
Okay, I'm just saying because the most recent ones seem to be a lot worse than the older ones. So I don't know if he's lost his fastball or what.
Yeah, so Bill O'Brien was the last one he placed. We don't need to rehash Bill O'Brien, but he helped place
four division titles. Let's rehash.
John Dorsey in Cleveland as the general manager. How about some of these, okay?
That was a good – by the way, where would you stand with that with John Dorsey? John Dorsey, it seems like if you bring him in to do a job, he'll do the job. It just – people really get sick of him, whether it's Andy Reid or whomever else.
What I find interesting is that this Jeb Hughes is big on culture fits, and guys like Coughlin and and Dorsey were ostensibly probably decent at their jobs, but just got sideways with everybody in the building. And O'Brien, yeah, too, quite honestly. Like, you know, so that's concerning. He plays Longhorn fans. He helped place Shaka Smart and Charlie Strong at UT.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
oh,
okay. Yeah.
Boy, college. I wonder if he's getting, a commission off of these contracts?
I would imagine
so. Is that how
so.
He gets paid?
I think so. That's what headhunters normally get. They get a percentage of the salary.
Start that search firm. And you know what I'm going to do? Because this is the thing, reading this article and other things I've known about Jed Hughes. It sounds like a decent enough guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's like a shyster or anything, but a whole lot of the attributes and the merits that they're listing in this article are that, hey, he knows a lot of people and he talks to a lot of people. And the issue I have with that is that one of the problems with trying to hire in football is that it is such a back-scratching league. Yeah. It is so much nepotism. It is so much of, hey, this guy was solid to me coming up, so I'm going to be solid to him. And hell yeah. Oh, sure, of course you should hire that guy. He's awesome. When meanwhile, like, in your heart of hearts, you know he sucks. I feel like somebody needs to start a search firm that's just heavy-duty, analytically based, that figures out personality traits of coaches and how they match up with different types of players and all that stuff.
Yeah, this is he uses a lot of questionnaires apparently and a lot of subjective stuff. That's a little scary. He placed Tom Thibodeau in Minnesota, where that went sideways for Dorsey and Coughlin reasons. Seth, you know,
everybody can make themselves look great on a questionnaire or an interview. It's a whole different deal when it comes down to, okay, but what do they actually do? What do they accomplish? Everybody talks a good game. That's why the numbers of sexual partners of men and women are so out of skew mathematically, because both sides are lying. Right. They got guys get those questionnaires. So Korn Ferry uses questionnaires. This is what happens when they get those sexual history questionnaires. Guys get it, and they're like, how many sexual partners have you been with? And like, they're not lying to anybody. It's an anonymous questionnaire, but in their brains they go like, it's got to be like 30 or 40. Yeah, I'll put 48. Yeah. That's about right. And that's what they think. And then the women are like, well, okay, you know, I mean, not really. I mean, gosh, that one doesn't count and that one doesn't count. And okay, it's 5. And none of it makes any sense because everybody's lying on the questionnaire.
Seth, how about this?
My number, by the way, Sean?
Yeah.
4,083.
Of course
it is. That was quite dynamic.
Of course it is. You're doing a deal. You're like the Wilt Chamberlain of upstate New York. So this is interesting because you asked McClain this question, I believe, yesterday about how much can the Texans do in terms of talking to other candidates while the season is going on here. How about this? Because Cleveland announced Dorsey's hiring shortly after firing Sashi Brown, questions arose about the team adhering to the Rooney Rule. But Jed Hughes says the Browns spoke with many candidates throughout the season, including minorities. They somehow managed to do so very quietly.
Right, which is, as I understand the regulations, you're not actually allowed to interview them during the season. So I suppose maybe if you're interviewing people who are, which is fun, you know, it's one thing, stuff happens, but if you're using it as your justification for why you actually spoke to candidates, that seems like, okay, no, you can get away with it up to a certain degree, talking to people without it being above the table, but you can't use it as, like, your way of getting out another one of our regulations.
I like
how, no, I couldn't possibly have been speeding. I was doing cocaine at the time.
I like how the article phrases that they somehow do so very quietly. I'm picturing candidates coming into Jimmy Haslam's office with Cleveland, and Jimmy Haslam's like, so, what would you do for our team? And the candidate's like, why are you whispering? We got to do this quietly because there's rules and regulations like the Rooney Rule.
Call them rules and regs around here, baby.
That's right. That's right. All right. Let's circle back to the Texans here. The uplifting, feasible plan to rebuild the Texans. We've been talking so much about trading J.J. Watt. I feel like for those of you out there who want to keep J.J. Watt, and I feel like most people in their heart of hearts would like to see him stay here if it's best for him. The uplifting, feasible plan to rebuild the Texans, and this one involves making J.J. Watt a Texan for life. We will lay it out for you next. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610 with you. Darren Revelle going to join us about an hour from now. I got to bounce a bad beat story off of him. Didn't get to it yesterday. Some poor guy in one of those daily fantasy things, Seth, I think it was a DraftKings deal, he thought he won $1 million. You know, he thought he had assembled a team that in a contest, he was in a $1 million contest. He thought he had won. And part of the daily fantasy team you put together is you have to buy a couple of defenses and they accumulate points for you. there was a play towards the end of the Rams-Bears game on Monday night that was at first ruled a sack.
Oh.
And as you may know, as somebody who had some sacks throughout your careers, those can get taken away from you after they go back and look at the film a day later.
Yeah, it's bogus.
It is kind of bogus, and this guy thought he won $1 million, and between calling all of his relatives and going and walking his dog after thinking he won $1 million, he came back to his apartment and pulled it back up just to refresh, just to look at it again. And all of a sudden, he's in sixth place, and he's only making $3,083. He's tied with like eight other people for sixth place because within like 10 minutes after the game was over, the official scorer had ruled a play where Jared Goff was tackled in the backfield as a designed run, not a sack.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Boy, you know what? I'll put that on that guy. He should have known from watching
it.
He should have thought, like, that'll get. Now, I wonder if he could, because sometimes you can appeal those to Elias, the sports bureau.
If you're a daily fantasy player, can you?
I don't know. Well, that player might. Which player was it?
Akeem Hicks.
Akeem Hicks might. Yeah. Akeem Hicks, as we know, doesn't. Wasn't Akeem Hicks the one that just had a big tantrum over, like, a pretty innocent question last year?
Yes,
remember
I think
somebody?
He was.
Somebody, like, was totally saying, was like, saying sarcastically, like, look, I know that you're not going to be the one that's going to be lazy or something. And the guy, like, took it completely literally and flipped out. So right. I would guess that Akeem Hicks would lobby Elias, the sports bureau. Gary Walker and I have an ongoing dispute over whether the first safety ever scored in Texans history was half his sack or not. Because I got there like a 16th of a second before him.
What'd the scorer say?
I got the sack, and it's all mine. Plus, Gary's got way more career sacks. He doesn't need them.
That's
like, you know, he's like a rich guy trying to be stingy with his sacks.
Yeah.
Or I got my however many I have. It's less than 20, I know.
Yeah.
Sean, I'm going to tell you another part that's bogus about sacks is intentional grounding. I will stand on this soapbox, and I don't care how few people care about it other than defensive linemen. When a quarterback throws the ball away because he's under duress, the offense – And it gets ruled intentional grounding. The offense loses the down,
and
you get knocked back 10 yards. For all intents and purposes, it's the same thing as a sack.
Right.
And yet that poor defensive lineman gets screwed out of the sack. You get nothing for that. You don't get a tackle. You don't get anything.
I think it's bogus,
an injustice, Sean. It's an injustice.
I think it's bogus, and they should hire an intern to go back and watch every NFL game ever and go back
ever.
And retroactively give sacks to people who force intentional groundings.
It really does. Sean, even the best pass rushers in the world are successful 1 out of 30 times rushing the passer and getting a sack. It's really, really hard to get a sack. And then a cowardly quarterback can just steal it from you with no nobility involved.
Steal your glory. All right, so the Texans rebuilding plan that we promised coming into this segment involves something I think some Texan fans, a lot of Texan fans, will probably like, making J.J. Watt a Texan for life. Before we get to that part of it, it's courtesy of Pro Football Focus. Hey, Ben, can you give us some, this feels like a mood music thing that we need. And we start to lay out bullet points like this. Yeah, here we go. It's from Pro Football Focus. It's Steve Palazzolo. Who, isn't he like 8 feet tall? He's the really tall dude, right?
He was a minor league pitcher. Yeah.
Okay. Brad Spielberger, not sure of his height, but Brad Spielberger,
okay.
And Steve Palazzolo. He was a minor league pitcher.
Palazzolo was, and he was a Jaguars fan growing up, so he actually, like, he's weird. He's, like, one of the weird, like, actually was a fan of Seth Payne back in the heyday, but now works in football. There's a few of these guys in the stat nerd community that think I'm smarter than I am, and they'll ask me questions about stuff. Like, hey, Seth, when teams are running out of this personnel group in 47% of the time, and I'm like, dude, I'm thinking about nachos. As soon as you started giving me percentages,
right.
I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
Right, yeah. Right. All right, so this article, we'll get to the plan to rebuild with J.J. Watt actually sticking around and being part of it. I think they lay out a few things, just sort of the groundwork for what exactly the Texans are and aren't right now that we should go through. I think the first one's fairly obvious. You're going to build around Deshaun Watson. I think that's a give. Whatever rebuilding plan you have, is the focal point is going to be Deshaun Watson. And Seth, they point something out, and I want you to tell me if this is real or if this is maybe something that its stats are obscuring something here, but they say, look, he's actually having a pretty good year. He's on a 1-6 team, but he's leading the league at what's an astronomical 8.8 yards per attempt right now. He's succeeding at getting the ball and pushing the ball down the field, which is kind of what the Texans designed the offense to do in the preseason.
I think that's it's fair and it's valid. I would say there are a couple things that sometimes that average yards per attempt isn't a good thing. You know, Jay Cutler always had high yards per attempt, partly because he was just always pushing the ball downfield too much so. And he would end up taking more sacks, which also when you take a bunch of sacks, your yards per attempt actually increases because you have fewer attempts.
Yeah, you never threw the ball, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a little bit of that where I feel like that's inflated. I do think that some of it's substance-based and that Deshaun's got good touch on his deep balls, excellent touch on his deep balls. And I think he is aggressive downfield. I think an offensive coordinator looking at Deshaun, though, will look at his game and look at numbers like that, the 8.8 yards per attempt, and think, you know what? He'll be a lot better if we coax that number down. Not that you're chasing the number, but that we want to start using the running backs more. We want to get the short game involved and really make defenses uncomfortable all over the place. I think that's something that's going to come down over time, and then you get more consistent drives. You don't have multiple three and outs, you know, to where your defense is left out on the field. So that's an area where I think between the maturation of Deshaun and a different offensive coordinator and head coach coming in, that'll be a little bit different next year, but it'll be for the better.
The other point that they put in favor, that Pro Football Focus puts in favor of the Texans in terms of how they should rebuild, really making the point you can really rebuild around the offense very, very quickly. Their pass blocking was much improved last year. It's even more improved this year, which feels weird because Deshaun has gotten sacked a lot. Some of that may be on Deshaun. But the Texans' offensive line is third in the league in pass blocking, according to Pro Football Focus.
And I think when you look at this, again, I'll put it from the standpoint of a coach or a GM looking at this Texans roster and what they would think about it. I think when you look at the pass blocking, when they're not making mental errors and when they're using good technique, they're pretty good. When they break down, it's usually because of bad technique. I mean, Zach Fulton just physically just can't get it done sometimes, and that's not a short-term problem, not a long-term problem. But the four guys that are going to be around, and I would include Max Sharping in this, I think, when they're doing things right, it looks pretty good. So you think, okay, there's potential here. And there's also potential that, okay, if they can do this in the pass game, they're physically athletic enough to be good run blockers. It's just that there is no consistency from week to week in the run game. I think that the technique that's been taught isn't consistent enough. So I think a coach that knows the full game, a coach that isn't just a passing game guru, but is just an actual offensive guru, is going to look at that offensive line and say, all right, yeah, we can work with this too, and they can be a lot better than they are right now. Because they do. You see it. You see it in flashes. You see it in specific games. Man, the offensive line had a pretty good game. Why do they fall apart the next week? I put a lot of that on coaching.
Yeah, and that's encouraging. If you're a Texan fan hearing that, that's very encouraging that it's that fixable. The defense is abysmal. On that side of the ball, there's really not much to build around moving forward. Your best players are Bradley Roby, who's still here for another couple of years after this year, J.J. Watt, who we'll get to in just a second, and Justin Reed, who I would submit that the Texans are, without knowing what the next general manager thinks of Justin Reed, if I had to bet, I would bet Justin Reed is here beyond 2021. I feel like he's a player that they want for the long term. Even though he hasn't been as good this year as maybe he's been in recent years, I feel like he's a player they want to keep around. Aside from that, maybe Zach Cunningham, but Zach Cunningham's been terrible this year. Other than that, it's all guys that you can swap them out, send them on their way. They're not very talented on that side.
And then I think, too, you know, I think people are frustrated with Blacklock right now, and it's understandable, but I do think that it's a hard position to learn, you know, for some guys. And I see the athleticism. I see the speed and explosiveness. I'm surprised that he doesn't look as strong as I thought he would. Sometimes it looks like he's kind of swallowed up by the size of NFL offensive players. But I think there's something there with Ross Blacklock. And I think depending on what scheme, especially if they come in and decide that they're going to be a 4-3, I think Blacklock as a 3 technique might have more success than as a guy that has to sit down there and anchor down versus double teams as much. I'm not giving up on him. I'm not giving up on Grenard. I'm not giving up on John Reed. I think there's some potential there. We're with a coaching staff that's decided those guys aren't going to see all that much playing time.
All right, so the offense has some pieces. The defense is bad. Now, as far as the rebuild goes, here's the situation. The Texans are right now $7 million over what the cap would be next year. And that's only with like 38 guys under contract. They've got work to do to create cap space. They don't have much draft equity. Their draft equity starts right now. It would start with pick number 70 in the draft. So they've got work to do. What they lay out in here is, Seth, a plan to recoup a little bit of draft equity, but more so clear out cap space so that they can go get some fixes here for the new general manager. I'm not going to get into the numbers of all these. I just want to rapid fire them to you and just say, sounds good. If you want to dig deep in any of these, let's start with J.J. Watt. They don't want to trade J.J. Watt in this rebuild. What they want to do is sign him to a two-year extension on top of the 1 year he would have left next year. So it would take him through 2024. That would be a non-guaranteed year, so they can park some bonus money there, and it would open up several million dollars in cap space.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And even though right now we're in trade mode, so it seems like all of a sudden a two-year extension feels like an eternity. That's where you would get the most out of J.J. Watt, I think, in his waning years in the league, where if a new coach comes in and can convince J.J. that, yep, changes are coming, we're going to be faster, we're going to be good faster than you think, I would imagine it would be appealing to J.J. to figure out a way to stick around. And because it's a gamble wherever you go. Let's say J.J. gets traded to Seattle or Green Bay or somewhere else this year, and that team, I don't know, gets rolled out in the divisional round or gets rolled out in the championship game. And then maybe a new coach with the Texans reinvigorates them, and the Texans are competitive the next 3 years. That's gonna be a crappy feeling, you know. JJ's probably got the fear of regret as much as potentially he might be enticed by anywhere else. And I like this scenario.
Here are the other things that would eventually clear. Just know that these moves, I'm not going to go into how much each saves, not radio friendly, but eventually this is going to create over $60 million in cap space for the Texans. And I think these are all reasonable things. Trade Kenny Stills. Cut Duke Johnson after the season. Trade Whitney Mercilus. Cut or trade Bernardrick McKinney. This is the one I want to stop on here, Seth. Cut or trade David Johnson. There are a lot of people out there clamoring, you know what? Just cut David Johnson now, and at least you can get out from underneath some of the, you can.
But it's all guaranteed. Like, you have to.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I guess this would be after the season, cut or trade David Johnson.
So then it's only $2.1 million next year, and I think that's guaranteed next year.
Yeah.
It's my gosh, he's made a lot of money the last few years.
Yeah. Well, obviously, if you trade David Johnson, then somebody else would be picking up the tab on him, so that would be good.
Yeah, he makes $2.1 million next year. Okay. So I don't know. You know what? That might be. I know that sounds like a whole lot of money given his current performance, but that might be something that people are totally willing. And they also feel like, hey, we'll actually use him in the passing game, unlike the Texans.
Right. Restructure Zach Cunningham. Restructure Laremy Tunsil. Restructure Nick Martin. And all this is saying is not pay cuts, but just take their money. Take their salary, turn it into bonus money, and shove some of it in future. Basically, it's like spending on a credit card, more or less.
Yeah, that's where it gets tough, because a lot of the guys that you would want to do that with, you just gave them their bigger contracts. So it's almost like rewarding. You're extending them. Again, I think with Nick Martin, look, they overpaid him. I think O'Brien put way too much importance on Nick Martin knowing, you know, how to make the calls and whatnot. That's something that you should be able to coach a guy to do if he's reasonably intelligent.
Yeah.
And Nick Martin's in the run game, especially at times, is just getting worked this year. He's just got to get better. Maybe a new coaching staff will be better at that.
The last one is cut Brandon Dunn. You'd save about $3 million off the cap. Seth, you take all those moves, about a dozen of them right there, about 10 or 12 of them, and they're all reasonable moves to me, really, including extending J.J. Watt and parking some money in future years. It's not an exorbitant number. It's 2 years, $32 million on the extension, and you would clear out about $60 million in cap space for next year. I like this plan.
$60
million? $60 million, Seth.
Oh, wow. Could buy a nice house with that.
That's right.
Yeah, but one of those houses in Silicon Valley or something.
Yeah. I think the big thing is,
What if Cal did that? What if Cal cleared out $60 million in cap space? sold the team and bought a big old mansion and
bought
Silicon
a boat.
Valley. Yeah, but I would, dude. If I were a billionaire, man, honestly, last thing I want to do is own a football team.
I know, I'd make it.
Well, and you know, like, and I don't know. I have zero clue about the McNair's finances or anything. But like, it's still, you know, Cal. I'm sure Cal is in line to inherit a whole lot of money, but I don't know if he's a billionaire or not. Yeah. At least if you're a billionaire, then you can say, ah, screw it all. If I'm a non-billionaire, if I'm only a pathetic 100 millionaire or so, last thing in the world I want to be doing is watching a football team with all this stress that comes with
pathetic.
It. People criticizing you on message boards and on social media and everything.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. All right.
A pathetic 200 millionaire.
Pathetic millionaire. Pathetic millionaire. Hey, a reminder, download the radio.com app. You can bring us with you wherever you go. Radio.com. Radio.com Rewind as well. Up next, as we head into the 9 o'clock hour, the Rockets have hired a new head coach. What is the main trait that Steven Silas is going to need in order to be successful in this job? We will discuss next.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.